And Wichita State a chance at the final shot. They're down one. This is for the win. Oh, off the front iron. Oh, my goodness. The Drake Bulldogs survive. And Drake will advance.
I want to give Drake all the credit. They played great tonight. They defended at a high level. We were only able to get 52 points. I thought we defended at a high level as well, holding them to 53. I thought the key to the game was we missed free throws. We probably missed 8 to 10 free throws. We didn't do a good job of sticking our landing on rebounds. Like, we would check them out. We would have a good stop, and all of a sudden the ball would bounce out of bounds, and it'll be their ball. We tried to keep going to our big boy inside. He did a great job scoring it tonight. They did a great job on Tyson, just basically like a boxing one, not allowing him to get the ball. But I give them all the credit. They play well.
Wichita State falls, and it's a game they should have won, quite frankly. They were up early, 18-6, 21-10, led by 12 twice. They held Drake to 10 points in the game's first 15 minutes. They were up 12, 11, 24 to go. They're up 10 with 9:25 to go. Drake, every time, answered with key three-point shots. Udazy with a career high, 22 points, 8 of 13 from the floor. Dexter Dennis had 13. Wichita State shot 34% from the floor, 3 of 18 from 3, just 11 of 22 from the line. And Tyson Etienne, their best player, co-conference player of the year, was a no-show. I don't mean no-show. He was there, but he was not a factor at all. He was 0 for 6, only 6 field goal attempts when your season's on the line, and 1 point. He had one free throw, and they still almost won. But they didn't. They lost, and Shockers end their season at 16-6 with a 53-52 loss to Drake. It's Drake's first tournament win in 50 years, and their last tournament win was against Wichita State. And then they lost to KU in the Elite Eight the next round to Drake back in 1971. So Wichita State, they lose 53-52, led most of the game, controlled most of the game. And a lot of people are upset. Shocker fans are upset. Listen, this is better than you ever would have dreamt, considering your coach was canned right before the season started. Isaac Brown did a wonderful job. Now, there was some talk at the end of the game, or after the game, with Wichita State. If you don't know the situation, well, first of all, Drake made a boneheaded play where they were passing the ball for a layup, hold the ball, and the game's over.
Yeah.
And then Dexter Dennis got a three-pointer off a steal. And then there was 8 seconds left, and Wichita State fouled, and then the 81% foul shooter for Drake went to the line. He just made a couple. It was a 1-1. Wichita State is down one, 53-52. That's a key point. They were down one, 5.3 seconds to go. Missed a free throw. They kick it to Gilbert, the point guard. He brings up the floor. He got a pretty good look, but he shot it from about 29, 30 feet. And he could have gone another dribble or two. He shot it with about a second and a half left. He could have gone and got closer. And I think that was the thing. Right away, when I watched it with my oldest son, I said he shot it too soon. He could have gotten closer. And the other thing is, they didn't need a three. They just needed two. Now, I'm not saying he there's no way he would have got all the way to the rim. But he had the guy on. And Kenny Smith made a great point, I thought, last night. He said it was a good shot. It wasn't a great shot because, I mean, he nearly made it. It was just short, a couple inches further, and he makes it. And it would be a game-winning shot. And Kenny Smith said, listen, that's not a bad shot. It's not a great shot. It's a good shot. A great shot, though, is that he would have taken another dribble or two, and the guy, the defender, was already on his heels. So even if he took another dribble or two, the guy still would have been on his heels. He said, yeah. And so then when the guy breaks down on you, that's when you can rise and shoot the jumper. That's spoken from an NBA guard that's had some success, and he's won NBA titles, so he knows what he's talking about. And I agree with that. Then Barkley said they should have called a timeout. I disagree with that. I can see why they would call a timeout, but you don't get to do what the NBA does all the time, advancing the ball left and right. Mm-hmm. And so with 5.3 to go, they got the ball out to the point guard, Elk Gilbert, very quickly. And you have an open floor, and the defense has to scramble. Does Drake, and they did get an open shot. It was too deep, I think, but it was an open shot. And you know, if you call a timeout there, then it's 5-on-5. You got to get the ball in,
yeah.
And everybody gets to regroup defensively for Drake. Could you come up with a better play? Maybe. Do you get a better shot? Maybe. I don't know, but I kind of am in between on that one. Like, I understand what happens, because if Isaac Brown, who I told my son, we were watching this game as it was going on, and Drake, when Drake went up four, I told my son, that's ball game. And my son goes, come on, Dad, there's still a minute and a half to go. I said, it's a ball game. I said, Wichita State has a young, or not young, but he is a fresh new head coach. And I said, these close games Drake's really good at, because they haven't lost one under 5 points. And Wichita State has lost a couple. Their games, pretty much, they've lost in close games, including the one against Cincinnati, which was a similar situation to what we saw last night. And so I thought, you know, I think Isaac Brown's done a wonderful job this year, but I was like, you know, he's not been in this situation, so I'm going to, you know, Drake's up two possessions. I think this game is over. And it would have been over had they not tried to throw the ball ahead for a layup with 8 seconds to go. You know?
Yeah.
And so at the end, I wasn't surprised they didn't call a timeout. But in fairness to Isaac Brown, if they go down and if that shot's made by Gilbert, or he takes another dribble or two, or he makes one pass and it's a wide open shot and they win the game, nobody's talking about how he didn't call a timeout. No. And if he calls a timeout and they turn the ball over and don't get off a shot or don't get the ball in and there's a five count, everybody's going to yell, why didn't you call a timeout? Just run with it. They couldn't set up their defense. So that's where you're damned if you do, damned if you don't as a coach. That's how it always is. I guarantee Isaac Brown is second-guessing himself today, as most coaches would. And I honestly will defend Isaac Brown on that one. And I disagree with Charles Barkley, and I agree with Kenny Smith. You know, to me, and they already had talked about it. In fact, let's hear from Isaac Brown about what they got on that final shot and what the plan was, because Isaac Brown and his team had already talked about in the previous timeout, in the previous huddle, listen, you know, you get in a situation, here's what we want to do. So if they already knew what they wanted to do, there really is no need to call a timeout.
You know, the last time we was in this same situation, Morris Udese rebounded and threw it to Dexter. So this time I told Dexter to get long, to get at the top of the free throw line. And when the ball is shot and we secure the rebound, I want you to sprint and get your feet set. I wanted Al Tariq and Tyson to get at each elbow at the free throw line. Whichever side it came off on, I wanted you to sprint up the court. They advance it to you, and we try to get to the rim as quickly as possible. We took a jump shot. They defended it well, just didn't make it. I mean, we had to get it up.
Yeah, I thought Gilbert panicked a little bit there. He shot it early. He could have gotten closer. There was about 1.5 to 2 seconds when he let it fly. That's plenty of time to take at least two more dribbles, definitely one. And he could get in one dribble, you can, you know, get 3, 4, 5 feet closer with the momentum. So, and that's easy to second guess a kid who, you know, got a still a decent look. I think it's a little bit unfair to say that Isaac Brown should have called a timeout. I saw Shocker fans afterward. I'm like, that's easy for you to say after the fact. Were you actually saying before he attempted the free throw for Drake? Were you actually saying rebound timeout? And if you were, then I'm with you. Okay, you already had your plan, and that's what you believe in. Not saying you're wrong. But when you say it after the fact, I mean, that's anybody in the world can do that. So Isaac Brown, they got a good shot. And once again, it wasn't great, but it was an open look. And we see kids making 28, 29, 30-footers all the time nowadays. I mean, the game's become a three-point shooting contest. And it was just short. And that's what happens. That's the difference between winning in the NCAA tournament and going home. It happens every year except last year because we had COVID and canceled the tournament. This is how the tournament rolls. You know, you can blame Isaac Brown all you want about not taking a timeout. You can blame Gilbert for taking the long three-pointer. You know what you really should point to? 11 of 22 Absolutely. From the foul line and 3 of 18 from 3 and shot 34%. And your star player only took 6 field goal attempts and made 1 point. I'm not putting all on the star player, but if you're a star player and your season's on the line, there is no way you can be held to 6 shots. Either it's bad coaching, not getting him in open spots, bad scheme, or it's a player that's going to have to be more aggressive. And maybe whatever the case may be, Tyson Etienne was non-existent last night. And that's a horrible time for your star player to disappear.
Morris Udese did a really good job of picking up the slack, right? And I think that Isaac Brown leaned on that too much,
maybe
too,
so.
Because there were times that Etienne wasn't on the floor, and I'm like, why is he not out there?
Yeah.
Like, and I know he's not having a great game, right? But in my mind, it's like what you said, right? The star player. How many times you watch the NCAA tournament, and it's a team you don't know anything about, right?
Right.
But you watch this first round, Thomas Walkup from Stephen F. Austin. Nobody knew the guy, right?
Right.
And this guy goes out and just lights people up. Now, college basketball, real college basketball fans probably knew who he was. He was scoring a lot of points for Brad Underwood's squad back then, you know. And so, but these guys, these star players, how many times you see in the NCAA tournament in these kind of games where they step up and their star shines?
Mm-hmm.
Like, some people didn't know about him, but you know about him now. And so that's that opportunity for Tyson Etienne to go out there and do that, right?
Great opportunity.
And he had 1 point, six shot attempts.
Yeah.
Now, he did not look confident at in the second part of the game. But at the same time, it's like as the announcers were saying, you know, if he hits one shot, he starts gaining a little confidence and things can turn around for him. And so there was times it's like, I know he's not playing great. I know he doesn't have a lot of, you know, again, not a lot of shot attempts. He only had 1 point there in the second half.
Right.
But it's still like, man, I want to ride with my guys. Like, I don't want him sitting on the bench. But maybe that was just philosophy that Isaac Brown had going in. Mm-hmm. But, again, Udezi did a nice job of picking up the slack. Dexter Dennis had a nice game. But, you know, you're not going to win a lot of games like that if you're top scorer and you're co-conference player of the year finishes with 1 point and you shoot 34% from the floor.
In fairness to Isaac Brown, though, Tyson Etienne didn't show anything last night.
Yeah.
So he went with the guys that were playing better.
Yeah.
So in fairness to Isaac Brown, you know, he can sit here and say, well, the star player should be on the floor and Isaac Brown should have him on the floor, you know, the whole game he should have been on the floor more often. But you know what? Tyson Etienne played plenty of time on the floor and didn't do anything.
Yeah.
And so Isaac Brown might be like, you know what? Our season's on the line and Tyson's just not there today. And so we're going to go with somebody else. And it once again, it just depends on your philosophy.
It's a battle of how you got to deal with that, right?
Well, it's like, a philosophy. Yeah. I mean, if you're a coach and you're like, dude, he's the guy got us here. He's one of the best players in the league. He's having an off night, but I still believe in him. And you shove him out there, and he continues to miss and miss and miss. Then you're going to say, and after the game, you're going to say, well, why did I keep doing that when I knew he was off? I just knew he was off. I could see it in his eyes. He was off. But I tried, you know, to put the faith in him that he'd come around. Like you said, make a shot, and then things will get going. But if it doesn't happen and it doesn't get going, then guess what you get? You get quite a question. Why was Etienne out there so often when he couldn't do anything, but this other guy off the bench and made a couple of threes? And then you get questioned. Well, you lost. Well, why did Etienne? Why did he only take six shots? Shouldn't there have been a better scheme? That was a bad plan by Isaac Brown. He should have gotten more shots, or Etienne should have been more aggressive, or he should have played more minutes. I mean, you can always second guess that, and that's the problem being a coach. I mean, you are going Absolutely. To get second guessed no matter what you do. When you lose a game by 1 point, and I don't care what level of sports it is, you lose by one possession, you're going to second guess yourself left and right, and everybody will. And then in a game magnified when your season's on the line, and you led by 12, and you were doing so many great things throughout the game, and to come down to that last possession, it's always easy to point to the final shot that didn't go in. And we can point to, well, you know, should he have called timeout or not? I don't think he should have. I thought he did the right thing. The players maybe didn't execute what he wanted to run. That happens. You can't play. You're a coach. You can't play. You tell your kids, and the kids are 18, 19, 20, 21 years old in college. They're going to make mistakes. Sometimes they make a play. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes it's bad luck. You know, whatever the case may be. You slip and you fall, and it's a travel. All that stuff happens. But the bottom line is Wichita State should have never been in that situation.
No.
They were up 12 twice. They're up 11. They were dominating the first half. They had a chance to blow this game. They had a chance to run away from Drake multiple times. And every time they had a chance to do it, they didn't.
I mean, Yesfu
had
that.
Without their star player doing anything.
Yeah, Yesfu had that like big dunk there toward the end of the first half, the big run that they made.
I thought they were in trouble then, but Wichita State steadied the ship and was fine.
That's what's wild to me is like you let them back in, and then you come back in the second half, and you're on.
Right.
You're good to get. Now, they were not – I mean, neither one of these teams was on offensively.
Oh, no, it was a tough game to watch.
You know, and so it was like it's 31-23. And the, you know,
it was 21-20 at halftime.
I mean, it's 21-20, and then it's 31-23. You're starting to get to the close to the midway point of the second half, and it's like 30-something to 20-something, and you're like, man, this game is not.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of people not stepping up, really. Right?
Oh, well, yeah.
You know, Yesfu and Udezi were the only two that really stood out last night at all. So, for the most part, not in the whole game. And so, you know, there's definitely opportunities, obviously, for Wichita State to just go ahead and put it away. And they never did that.
That's why the game is so sickening for you, because
you
knew you should have won.
Yeah, and I kept saying that, too, even when they were up by, like, you know, 7-8, you know, they kept missing free throws. I'm like, this is going to come back to haunt them if they can't make these free throws.
Mm-hmm.
And it did. I mean, there's no question that it did.
There's a couple times they got to stop and then get the offensive rebound.
Exactly.
Or defensive rebound.
He's right, yeah. I mean, it's like they're in position. They let the ball go. They didn't get to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like that's almost more frustrating than not being in position to get the rebound, right? Because you're like, you have it. It's right there. Get it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't. And, yeah, there were just so many things that went wrong for Wichita State there. And keep key moments too. Mm. Like it's like you get a lead, and just but you see that a lot in the tournament too, sure, right? Teams that get out with leads, and all of a sudden, boom, it's evaporated, and you're on your heels now.
All you had to do is look at last night. Did you watch the four games? The four games are all the same.
Yeah.
Like Norfolk State had a huge lead and blew it, and then barely won.
Yeah.
Okay, so you were just talking about you see this all the time in the tournament. We saw it in every game last night.
Yeah.
There were four games last night, and the team that was down double digits came back and took the lead in every one of those games. I mean, Texas Southern was down 10 at halftime, came back and won by 8. And that just leads me into the results from last night if you missed it. But Texas Southern beat Mount St. Mary's, a battle of 16 seeds. They were down 10. They came back and won by 8. Drake was down 12 on two occasions, came back, beat Wichita State by 1. Norfolk State was up, 18. I know they're up at least 18. Mm-hmm. They then were down late in the game, and then they won by 1 over Appalachian State. And Michigan State was in complete control. Mm-hmm. I don't know how big a lead they had, but they were up 12 right before halftime. They lost last night in overtime to UCLA. So you talk about it happens at the tournament all the time. Dusty, it happened in every single game last night.
I'm not making that up when I say that, right? Like, it happens all the time.
It happened to all four teams at double-digit leads last night.
Yeah, and so, you know, it's...
Because teams aren't going to just give up on their season when you get to this point.
No, exactly. And you're not going to... I mean, if you have a chance to bury a team, you've got to do it.
Do it, yeah. And
if you don't, you're going to be paying for it. And you're going to get these questions like Isaac Brown does today. He got a lot of softballs in the press conference. I'm going to tell you that. But the reason is what you said earlier, right? Wichita State wasn't expected to be here.
Right.
They were picked to finish 7th. So a lot of that stuff is like, oh, you had a great season your first year. What are you going to remember about it? You know, If that's KU,
it's a completely different press conference.
100%. And they finally, somebody asked him about the last shot there at the end, basically at the end of his time at the press conference. And
how is that not the first question
I know.
You
it's like, why? I was like waiting for it because I wanted to cut for it, right?
Yeah.
And I was waiting for it. I'm like, are they going to ask him about what happened on the last play or not? And then finally somebody from I think KWCH or something asked him about it, and I was like, okay, well, this should have been the first question.
It should have been.
Then
the second question I would have had is, what do you think caused Tyson Etienne's struggles?
And they talked about that too before they even talked about the shot. But those were the only real critical questions, right?
Yeah,
were about Etienne and the shot, but everything else was
softballs.
Everything's sunshine and rainbows because he had a great season. And again, like if you would have said this at the beginning of the year,
right,
that you're going to go 16-6 co-American Athletic Conference or American Athletic Conference regular season champions, you're going to have the co-player of the year.
Right.
Okay, I'll take all that.
Right. But
the way it ends is the way it ends, and you always remember that, right?
You were up 12 twice.
Yeah.
Controlled the game for most, and then can't finish it. So,
I mean, Drake looked like a JV team for most of the
first half. 15 minutes, they couldn't
score. I mean, I was like, this team does not look good right now.
And I've seen Drake play a few times against the Loyola, and they're good. Drake's a good
team.
They
played K-State the first game of the year that K-State played.
That's right.
This team looks pretty good.
Yeah. Look out, KU. Because if Drake wins the next two, beats USC, they could play KU in the second round, and then they could take out all the state schools in 1 year. K-State in the regular season, Wichita State, KU in the tournament. Hard to believe that Drake hadn't won a tournament game in 50 years.
Yeah.
I saw 1971, and it's just like, you know, that just, for me, I was like, oh, yeah, it's been a while.
Weird,
and then somebody goes, 50 years. I'm like, that's not 50. Oh, crap, that is 50 years. It's 2021. It has been half a century. That's insane.
It was 30 years ago that Kirsten Leitner made that shot.
Oh,
like,
my goodness.
What?
Yeah. Drake had lost 11 in a row to Wichita State, so they were due, and they got it done last night.
Yeah.
So, today, here's the schedule. Florida and Virginia Tech, the first game on CBS at 11:15 this morning. Arkansas Colgate at 11:45 on True TV. Illinois Drexel on TBS at 12:15. Let's see here. Texas Tech, Utah State at 12:45 on TNT. Ah, that's going to be an interesting game, Texas Tech and Utah State. I think that's going to be a tight one. I got Texas Tech going Sweet 16 in my bracket, so that means Utah State will win. Ohio State and Oral Roberts. I think Oral Roberts is a team that could give Ohio State some problems, but I think Ohio State will come through. Nah, they better, because I got them on Final Four. That's at 2 o'clock on CBS. Baylor-Hartford at 2:30 on True TV. Loyola Chicago and Georgia Tech at 3 o'clock. Georgia Tech without their top scorer. I have Georgia Tech in my bracket, and I'm so tempted to change it because Moses Wright isn't going to play, but When you change things, then it usually bites you. So I'm just going to stick with what I had, Georgia Tech. I love Chicago's good. I've seen it a few times.
Uh-huh.
That's at 3 o'clock today on CBS. It's TBS, and that'll be a good game. Tennessee and Oregon State, you know, those 12s versus 5s. 2 years ago, the last time we had a tournament, 3 12s beat a 5, and the 4th 12 blew it in the final seconds against Auburn, or would have had all 12s beat a 5. And then Auburn then went on to beat KU.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what happened then. So Oregon State is on a roll. Tennessee is kind of limp down the stretch. Tennessee, Oregon State at 3:30 on TNT.
Looks like we're both supporting the Beavers today with their.
Tennessee's orange too.
But they're not orange. They're kind of a pop creamsicle orange. That's Oregon State.
Wow,
right there.
Dusty pulling out the creamsicle adjective. Yeah. That's good stuff.
I think of the Buccaneers, right? Old Buccaneers uniforms.
Uh-huh. Yeah, right. I love those.
That's
by the way.
Tennessee's colors.
I've got an old Buccaneer jersey work done. I love those jerseys. And now I hate the Buccaneers because they beat the Chiefs in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. And hate's a strong word, but I'll stick with it on that one. I'm kidding. So I just really, really despise them now. But yeah, we are. We're wearing orange.
Wearing Oregon State.
You are. Yeah.
Because my friend, an Oregon State grad, and sent me this. I'm like, hey, my team's not in it. I'm going to support the Beavers.
Well, you know what? I'm going to change my bracket. I'm going to pick Oregon State. Oregon State, Tennessee. I'm telling you, that's a dangerous game. 3:30 on TNT. Then there's another team that wears orange, Oklahoma State, a 4 seed. Some people got them, you know, going in against Illinois in a Sweet 16. Even a few people got them pulling off an upset. They got to take on Liberty, a 13 seed, and I'll tell you something right now. Liberty's not a bad team.
Yeah.
That's at 5:25 on TBS. We'll see. You know, Cade Cunningham could be that guy that could carry them a ways, or, you know, maybe not quite ready for primetime, and they lose today. North Carolina-Wisconsin is an intriguing 8-9 matchup. That's tonight at 6:10 on CBS. Houston-Cleveland State, True TV at 6:15. Purdue, North Texas at 6:25 on TNT. It seems like Purdue always tends to lose early in the tournament. Clemson against Rutgers at 8:20 on TBS. Interesting here. Clemson's a 7 seed, Rutgers a 10. My wife has Clemson in the final four. I have Clemson losing in the first round to Rutgers. So go ahead and put all your money on Clemson.
I have Clemson in the middle of you two.
My wife won our family pool by a mile 2 years ago, and she doesn't think it. She doesn't know much about those teams. I do, and I overanalyze it. So I'm very interested in that game only from a family perspective. San Diego State and Syracuse. I've got Syracuse winning a game or two in the tournament. That's at 8:40 on CBS. West Virginia, Morehead State at 8:50 on True TV tonight. West Virginia is a team I just didn't know what to do with them in my bracket. I mean, I was sitting there going, dude, they could easily make Sweet 16. I'm like, dude, they could easily lose to Morehead State. And then Villanova, Winthrop. I got Winthrop winning that game. Villanova without Colin Gillespie. Winthrop's only lost once this year. Winthrop's good. And they always play a tough non-con. Well, this year they didn't get to because of COVID. But 8:57 on TNT. I got Winthrop winning that one. And so those are the matchups today. Then tomorrow, I won't give you the times, but I'll tell you the matchups. Tomorrow, first round action, Colorado-Georgetown. A lot of people have Georgetown winning 12 over a 5. And when everybody has one team picked over another, that's when I stay away from it. I stuck with Colorado. Florida State, UNC Green. By the way, Mark Johnson, he had a call I saw on social media of the USC game in the Pac-12 tournament. He had a great call of a game-winning shot by Colorado on a follow. Just tremendous. He has this deep radio voice.
It's insane.
I'm so jealous.
He's
got great pipes, man. He does a great job, you know. Football and then basketball, and good friends with John Bowden and John. He's probably listening right now. And Mark does a wonderful job. And I wouldn't mind if Mark, you know, came on a little bit closer. I could hear him more often, you know, wherever that might be. You know, if he's
it's a good thing he didn't miss his calling with that voice,
right? Yeah, I mean, I don't want to replace Wyatt Thompson or Brian Haney. They're good friends of ours in the program or anything like that. But I don't know any. And Greg Sharp's great in Nebraska, so I guess what am I going to do? That's as close as we can get, I guess, without upsetting friends of ours.
Yeah.
But Bart, he's just got these great, great, great pipes for a play-by-play guy. So Georgetown, Colorado tomorrow, Florida State, UNC Greensboro, Kansas, Eastern Washington, more on that in a moment, LSU, St. Bonaventure, Michigan, Texas, Southern tomorrow, Creighton, UC, Santa Barbara, Alabama, Iona, Rick Pitino against Alabama. That's interesting. USC, Drake. Iowa against Grand Canyon University. Bryce Drew is head coach at Grand Canyon. Remember, he's the one who hit the shot for Valpo over Ole Miss back in the day. And, of course, his brother's head coach there, Scott, at Baylor, and his dad was Homer Drew, a very good coach. UConn, Maryland, that's an interesting game as well tomorrow. Virginia, Ohio. I got Virginia out quick. I think the fact that they haven't been able to do anything all week long and then just getting together today, and Ohio's a good team. Oklahoma, Missouri is a tough one for me because Oklahoma without Harmon, I think it's easy to say pick Missouri. But I see Missouri blow a lot of games this year.
Neither one of these teams is performing really well down the stretch.
No, here. Missouri's blown some big-time leads this year. So I'm going to stick with OU in that one. Gonzaga, Norfolk State, I think I'll go with the Zags. BYU, UCLA, and then Texas, Abilene Christian tomorrow, and then Oregon, VCU. And there are quite a few people that I've noticed that are jumping on the Shaka Smart Texas Longhorn bandwagon, which I just can't go there. I just can't quite go there. I think I got them winning a game or two, and that's it. So, if you want to fill out your bracket and or send us a copy of your bracket, we'll have a contest. I don't know what we're giving away, but we'll have a contest.
Just get them in, too. Like them in. I have enough pick sheets into the thing to if I need to put them in late, it's fine. Just get them in by noon or one today or whatever.
Well, the first game is 11:15. So yeah. I always say people need to turn them in before the tip today. So 11 o'clock.
11's fine if that's the deadline.
You can put them in at 1 o'clock. I don't care when you put them in, but... Let's have everybody turn in their brackets if you want to compete against all of us, you know, guys that think we know what we're talking about. you can go ahead and send in your bracket. Email us, kdnssports@yahoo.com or kdnskzdy@nckcn.com. Or you, if you happen to be close enough and know us to where you have our numbers, you could probably take a picture of it.
That's fine with me.
Text it to us, whatever.
I look at it and put it into the computer, so it doesn't matter how I get it.
Or you can drop off a physical copy, which some people have done here this morning. You can do that here at the radio station up on Broadcast Hill west of Glen Elder. Let's talk KU Eastern Washington, and then we'll go through our brackets and what we have picked for people that might be curious. KU and Eastern Washington tomorrow, 11:45 pregame. The NCAA waiving the rights fees this year for the NCAA tournament.
So I know. I was like, wait a second.
Yeah.
It was funny because he said the other day, like, I don't see that changing anytime soon. And all of a sudden, you sent that email to me. It says rights fees are waived.
Yeah.
No rights fees this year. I'm like, oh, yeah, we can carry KU on the radio.
I'll be even more stunned if next year there's no rights fees. But so that's a good thing. We get to have the KU games on the radio. 11:45, I say games. It's assuming they win tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
This will be the year, right, where we can do them and they lose in the first round.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. We get to do it for free, and then boom. KU Eastern Washington tomorrow, 11:45. KU the 3 seed in the West, and Eastern Washington is the 14. That's on Z9 6.3 Lake tomorrow, 11:45 pregame, 12:15 tip time at Farmers Coliseum there in Indianapolis. And I've been to Farmers Coliseum. It is a small building. They're going to have about, I think, 1,200 fans, but it can hold 6,500, but there's a limit on capacity at all these arenas that they're playing at. And Bill Self talks about Eastern Washington, and it's a team that can score, and they'll be hard to defend because they spread the floor.
They can all shoot, and they can play around the true big. You know, I think it's pretty impressive. And, you know, we say this most every year, but we didn't get any favors on this deal. There's a guy that doesn't start on their team that was unanimous preseason player of the year in the league. And he's good enough to not only make 9 threes, I think he took 18 against Southern Utah, which obviously had the best record. And he's not starting. And then their big guy is the player of the year in the league this year. And they've got basically, you know, got 5 averaging double figures and a 6th averaging 8.5. So they can score the ball and they can all shoot and stretch it. They're a tough team to guard based on, you know, the tapes that we've watched.
So Bill Self and the Jayhawks getting ready for Eastern Washington. Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, was with us yesterday on the show. And I asked Brian, give us a scouting report about Eastern Washington.
They've got the Big Sky player of the year and the tournament player of the year, the big man who can stretch it. They really, all 5 players on the floor can shoot threes at 33% or better. And, you know, it's like a poor man's Villanova if you think back to the 2018 Final Four. I don't say that to scare you. Sure. I'm only using the comparison to say that all 5 guys can shoot threes, and they'll bring their 5 man to the perimeter to try to pull David or whoever out there. And so you have to be fully cognizant of the fact that anybody at any given time can beat you from deep, and they're going to open up spacing with the way they spread the floor. And so it's a club that's won 13-14. That they're peaking at the right time, and clearly have some big time all conference caliber talent that feels like they've got as good a shot as any. And I always say, and I hate breaking it down this way, but it's so true. You know, when you talk about Cinderella stories and upsets, David beat Goliath by slinging it. He was slinging a stone, right?
That's right.
David's in tournament time beat Goliath by slinging the threes, chucking the threes. And this is a team that truly has five or six guys that could lead them on any given night from downtown, and that should be scary for Kansas fans. They got to come out and contest on the catch. They got to be right there and make everything a contested shot and try to assert your will early. As we use this cliche every year, too, you don't want to let Cinderella hang around at the ball for too long. Make that clock midnight early. Because if they come in raining in threes and multiple guys are hitting them and they're feeling it and that rim's looking bigger and all of a sudden the lights aren't too bright and the stage isn't too big because, by golly, we're up nine on number three Kansas, then they're settled in and they're going to be there for the full 40. See if you can break their necks early. They go for the head of the snake right out the gate and assert who Big Brother is from the get-go. That's not going to be enough to bury them because they've got the firepower to shoot their way back in it. But it is a little bit scary when you look at the matchup on paper because stylistically, it kind of is that prototypical Cinderella-type team. It's got all the shooters that were made for March, made for this moment. Kansas needs to remember, hey, we're one of the best defensive teams in our league. We can it. Best defensive teams in the country. So let's go out there and take away what they do well. And I think that's going to be the key coming up on Saturday afternoon. Yeah.
All right, so a team that can shoot some threes, they can spread the floor. It's interesting. Here's a little bit more about Eastern Washington. They won 13 of the last 14 games. They finished second in the Big Sky regular season. They won the conference tournament. They shoot 47% from the floor. That's a pretty good percentage. They are great on the defensive boards, and they nail everything from the foul line. They shoot the ball well. They're consistent from the field. They're able to get inside, but they aren't very good in regards to getting second chance opportunities. They're also not very good at forcing turnovers, so they don't get a lot of points in transition. So that's something to keep in mind. Now, KU at times has a rash of turnovers, and you know, you got to keep that in mind as well. KU is also dealing with COVID issues. David McCormick expected to play tomorrow, but he's arriving today. Hasn't practiced throughout the week. Jalen Wilson will not play tomorrow and probably not on Monday if KU makes it that far. And Tristan Aruna is out for the first two games of the tournament. So KU will be a little bit shorthanded. They're going to have to play five guards quite a bit unless Whitefoot plays really well tomorrow or McCormick gets his full allotment of minutes. We shall see how effective he is. But every game is going to be dangerous no matter who you play. Kansas fans always worried about a first-round upset, but it's been a while since KU's been upset in the first round. You know, people point out Northern Iowa, that was not a first-round game. That was a second-round game. People point VCU, that was the Elite Eight. VCU made it to the Final Four, so there was no shame in losing that game, even though KU was a number one seed, and VCU was a double-digit seed, but VCU made all the Final Four and beat a whole bunch of teams. That was not a first-round game. The two first-round games that people are stuck on is Bucknell against Kansas, and that was Bill Self's second year, because his first year, Bill Self went to the Elite Eight in St. Louis against Georgia Tech and lost in overtime. I know I was there for that, and if there wasn't a phantom foul on Keith Langford and he didn't foul out, I still think KU would have won. But unfortunately, they did not. They lost in the Elite Eight to Georgia Tech that year. Next year, they started year like 20-0, number one team in the country, Wayne Simeon and Miles, and then they end up losing, and Langford was hurt going into that tournament, and they ended up losing to Bucknell. And Bill Self, in a book that he has released, you know, since then, he and the staff knew that they weren't the best team in the country. They ranked number one when they started 20-0. They knew they had flaws. It's just that they were able to cover it up, win some close games. Came back to bite them as a four seed against Bucknell, who was a 13, if I remember correctly. It was three. Was it three versus 14? That might have been
three. I think that year was 3-14.
That was three. I know Bradley was a 13.
Yeah.
So that year. And then, of course, I think it was the next year, Kansas lost to Bradley. That was a KU team that was very young, that has struggled in Maui, and then came really played well late in the year, and they beat Texas, the Big 12 championship, won the tournament, and they were just, you know, not ready for that moment. Those guys were so young, and then there was that Irishman guy that was pretty good that ended up being drafted a center for Bradley, and KU played tight. They were young. They showed it, and they lost. Those are the two first-round upsets for Bill Self. Those are the two, and that's a long time ago. We're talking 05 and 06. I mean, that's 15 years ago. So, you know, it's funny how KU fans and even people that want to, you know, get all over Kansas about how Kansas flames out in the tournament, that's really not true. you got to go back a ways. I mean, yeah, okay, Northern Iowa, that was a second-round loss. They were a number one overall seed. That was a pretty bad loss. That was the second round. BC was the Elite Eight. Villanova was the Final Four. I mean, you can go on and on. Now, Roy Williams lost a couple times in the first round, but sometimes he had worse seeds. But, of course, UTEP was one of those that you remember back in the day, too. But, you know, another time I think of KU being loaded and lost to Rhode Island. Elite Eight in Denver lost to Syracuse when they were loaded. So, yeah, Kansas is flamed out because they're always the favorite almost. Mm-hmm. So if you don't win at all, it's all disappointing. You don't make the Final Four, it's all disappointing. Should Kansas have more Final Fours and more national championships based on all the seeds they've had? Yeah, absolutely should. They've underachieved when it comes to that,
right?
What's that?
There's probably a lot of teams that can say that, too.
Well, yeah, I guarantee you. Look at all the Duke seeds.
How many times do you see it, right?
Thing is, Duke's got multiple championships with those seeds. Carolina with Roy Williams has three championships since he left Kansas. And Bill Self has one. And Bill Self's had better seeds in North Carolina over the last 15 or every year he's been there. No worse than a four. But when you're a four seed, a three seed, a five seed, you're vulnerable to upsets. More so, of course, we've done the percentages that, only 8-2 seeds have ever won. Only 1-16 has won. We know that. That was Virginia losing to UMBC a few years ago. There have been a handful of 14s over threes, and Kansas suffered one of those in their history. This is a game that worries Kansas fans because you've got a team that can shoot threes. They spread the floor, and Kansas with the issues with COVID-19, and they will have the pressure on them. And a lot of these guys, for the most part, haven't been in these roles because they didn't get a play in the tournament last year. That's another thing that hurts Kansas. You know, you think about this. Last year, they were the number one overall seed, or would have been. And whether they would have won it, made the Final Four, I don't know. But on top of that, they would have at least had experience for their guys coming back this year to have played in the tournament. Christian Brown has no experience in the NCAA tournament. Jalen Wilson has no experience. David McCormick, doesn't have experience in the tournament. Marcus Garrett's the only guy on this team that has experience in Lightfoot a little bit in regards to NCAA tournament experience. That's it. So how is Kansas going to handle that? The other thing is that could help Kansas is with not having a lot of fans there, if Kansas does get down, it won't be the old gasp. You won't hear the, and then all of a sudden people start flipping to the underdog. That might actually help Kansas. This game worries me. I think any KU fan will be worried about every game, no matter who they play. I mean, KU could play a 16, and KU fans will be worried. I get it. KU is a 10.5-point favorite. If it were me, I'd take Eastern Washington to cover, based on what I'm reading and understanding. At the same time, I think Kansas is very good defensively to where I think they could make this a muddy game. If it's a muddy game, that means probably a lower scoring game. And if that happens, then I think Eastern Washington covers the spread. I'll stick with Kansas winning this game. I'll say Eastern Washington covers the spread. I think Kansas is going to be pushed a little bit, but I'll say the Jayhawks advance. But in my bracket, I have them losing second round to USC. Full disclosure.
I'm losing to Iowa in the Sweet 16.
I'm going to Sweet 16.
Yeah, but again, I'm kind of like the same as you, right? Like KU wins but covers or doesn't cover, I mean.
Right.
Because when you think about it, no matter who's playing, whether it's KU or anybody as a favorite against an underdog like Eastern Washington, like when you're talking about that team, because I didn't do a lot of research. KU's not the team that I really follow, so I don't. But with all that that Brian Haney talked about and that you've talked about and Bill Self talked about as well, those are the kind of teams that really scare you in a tournament, no matter who you are.
Yeah.
Because if that's that team that day is hot from three, that's hard to beat.
That's the great
No matter
equalizer.
Who they are. If they get on and start hitting, and you got more than one guy that's doing it right. It's not just one guy making three after three after three, but you got guys that can spread the floor and they're making threes all game. I mean, look at the NBA with the Golden State Warriors when they were winning.
Right.
I mean, if you get on that kind of hot streak, those teams are tough to beat no matter who you are. And so you really got to be focused defensively, and you got to close out. Like you said, too, you cannot give them those second chance opportunities.
Right.
If they're not good at that, don't let them be good at that tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Like, don't give them those second chance opportunities if those shots aren't falling. But those are the teams that, I mean, always kind of make me nervous, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then you get into the game, and maybe they're struggling that night, and it could turn into a 15-20-point win for KU, too, if they're playing the right way.
Eastern Washington has played at Arizona and should have won that game. Arizona didn't make the tournament, but they usually have talent. They played Oregon. They played Washington State. So they played some Power 5, Pac-12 schools. They're not going to be afraid of Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
I think In a normal year, if Bill Self was running the, you know, two bigs in the three-guard lineup, I would hate this matchup.
Oh, absolutely. It might be better off that McCormick can't play the whole game. Right?
Maybe. Because
those five guards and stay with them.
Exactly. Because if
Eastern
Washington...
I was thinking that at the same time you were talking about that, too.
If Eastern Washington is a team that wants to shoot threes, which I haven't looked up the numbers how great they are at shooting threes, but if they're a team that likes to drive and kick and shoot threes with a five-guard lineup, the KU should be able to stay in front of these guys. And they should be able to maybe get them off the three-point line. Now, you don't have a shot blocker, you know, and they haven't all year. You know that. And then the other thing is that they're not great on the boards, it sounds like, Eastern Washington. That's where, if McCormick is in there, maybe you can get some second, third chance opportunities and so forth and so on. And I think this game could easily go down as KU wins easily because they depend on maybe shooting too many threes, Eastern Washington, or Kansas is in a dogfight. Who knows? But at the end of the day, I think KU, I do think with this type of team, they can go four-guard lineup. They can go – I mean, that's all they've done this year, four guards, one big, or five guards. And I think now if you're playing four or five guards, you can defend the teams that rely on three-point shooting better. Now, it doesn't mean you're going to be great against them, but it does mean you're more – like we saw what happened to Kansas in the Final Four against Villanova. We've seen what happened with Udoka Azubuike and Sylvia DeSosa. We've seen David McCormick having to come out this year against guys that shoot threes or bigs that can space the floor, and that's what Eastern Washington's got, bigs that can pop out. And so then what happens is you take McCormick out, then they post the big. Now who's going to guard the big? Marcus Garrett? He can guard any position on the floor. That's a great equalizer there, too, that Kansas has in their back pocket. So, yeah, I mean, this Kansas team is vulnerable as any Kansas team has been in quite some time in regards to losing in the first round. I don't think there's any question about it. And we sit here and we say, well, Eastern Washington worry about their offense and shooting threes. Kansas' offense struggles a lot at times, and they rely on the three-point shot, especially if McCormick doesn't play a lot tomorrow. So, you know, Kansas is very vulnerable to being a prime-time upset pick in the first round or at least in the second round. In fact, most people have USC beating KU in the second round, all the brackets and the national media people, which very well could happen. Or Drake beats USC and then Drake beats KU, but I think KU is going to get by Eastern Washington. You agree?
Yes.
Okay, so you got KU against Iowa in the Sweet 16. All right, so let's go through our final four picks here. We do this every year except last year, unfortunately. I don't have Dusty's bracket in front of me, but I'm going to find it here real quick.
So, mine's right here.
Okay, you got it right there. Okay. Well, let me just give you some of the people that have turned in stuff here. I've got Illinois winning it all. My oldest son has Gonzaga winning it all. My youngest son has Gonzaga winning it all.
A lot of zags in there.
Let's see. Bryce has Baylor winning it all. Ryan has Gonzaga winning it all. Eric has Gonzaga winning it all. Quinn has Baylor winning it all. Stu has Baylor winning it all. TJ has Gonzaga winning it all. John has Gonzaga. B has Illinois. Oh, goodness. I didn't realize that. I should change my pick right away. Owen has Gonzaga. Apparently all the Eilerts chose the Zags. Kyle says Zags. Scott says Zags. Derek says Illinois. Woo. Chloe says Alabama. That'd be interesting. Please no. They won a football title. That's enough. Lisa says Gonzaga. Bruce says Michigan. That's the first Michigan I've seen. And Ivy says Gonzaga. And we'll get many more besides that. I might not have them all here. Who do you have winning it all?
I thought I was alone until Bruce came up. I got Michigan. Juwan Howard's going to take him where he couldn't as a player.
Really? Without Isaiah Livers for the whole tournament, huh?
Yeah.
See, that's why I couldn't go there. If they had, they were fully healthy, I might have done that. But
yeah.
Without Livers, I don't think they're going to have enough. Okay, so let's go to the West region. Who do you got in the Elite Eight?
Gonzaga and Iowa.
And that's who I have in the Elite Eight as well. And who do you have
winning?
Zags winning. So you got the Zags winning. Zags beat Iowa pretty good earlier in the year. I tell you, I can definitely see Iowa losing early, though. I really can. I can see Oregon could be a tough matchup for them in the second round. But we both got Gonzaga coming out of there. I think Gonzaga's got a fairly easy walk to the Final Four, which usually means that they're going to get knocked off. Now, the winner of the West will play the winner of the East in the Final Four. Who do you got in the Elite Eight in that one?
So Michigan and then Texas.
I got Michigan, Alabama in the Elite Eight. And I've got Michigan winning, which I I know. I tell you what, I don't know if Michigan's got enough without Isaiah Livers, but I got Michigan in the Final Four. You got Michigan. Well, you do because you picked them. Okay. Yeah. So you got Michigan against Gonzaga, and you got Michigan beating Gonzaga?
Yeah.
I got Gonzaga beating Michigan. All right. On the other side, in the Midwest, let's go lower right-hand corner. The Midwest, Illinois is number one seed. I've got them winning it all. So I've got Illinois, and believe it or not, I didn't realize I had this in my bracket, so this is the kiss of death. I've got Illinois against West Virginia in the Elite Eight.
I got the same.
Oh, my gosh. I just don't. I'm not buying Houston.
Underhill against Tuggy, man.
That'd be something. That'd be awesome.
Well, it's like
I just can't buy Houston.
I want to see Oklahoma State, Illinois. So Underwood against Oklahoma State, who he coached for a year,
right?
And then take on.
Is that what you have in your bracket?
I don't. I have Tennessee in the Sweet 16, but
yeah,
I would love to see it.
I could. I mean, West Virginia could lose first round.
I know. West Virginia is always dangerous, no matter what, right? You just never know every year. Like
they can.
You know, the one year they did make it to the Elite Eight, and then it's like,
well,
what are they going to do this year? And it's
the difference with them this year is they can score now.
Yeah.
They've gone more of a four-guard lineup, too. I'll say, so we both got Illinois coming out of that region?
I got Illinois beating West Virginia.
Okay, so far we've got all ones. So then we go to the South. Will Dusty and I stick with chalk, or will we go different? In the South, Baylor is the one seed. I got Baylor, Ohio State, and the Elite Eight, 1-2.
Same?
I got Ohio State beating Baylor. I got Ohio State in the Final Four.
I have Baylor in the
You went four number one seeds, all
I just
chalk.
Kept it the way it was.
You just went straight chalk.
Yeah, and usually I don't do that, but there was nothing that was like, I got to do this. This has to happen.
That's how I felt about I wanted to pick somebody against Michigan, and I couldn't come up with it. I wanted to pick somebody against Gonzaga. I couldn't come up with it. Although I think Michigan, I can't jump on the Texas wagon. Alabama, I just haven't seen them enough to buy in fully. And I think Alabama could have a tough second-round game against UConn. And then on the other side, I've seen Ohio State, and they're good. They really are good. And Baylor, I'm just not drinking all the Kool-Aid with Baylor. They still haven't found their rhythm yet. Maybe they will. And I got Illinois. I feel really good about Illinois and Gonzaga. Michigan, I'm kind of like, can't pick anybody besides Michigan that I'm really happy about. Florida State, maybe. But they struggle to score at times. So it came down for me, only one time in NCAA tournament history has there been four number ones that made the tournament, and that's when KU won it all in 08, and KU was the lowest of those four ones. And then they blew out North Carolina, and then, of course, the crazy comeback and Memphis missing free throws and the Chalmers miracle shot, the three to tie it, force overtime, and Bill Self got his title in San Antonio in 08. That's the only time you've seen all four number ones make it. And everybody talks this year about how the upper tier, there's just three or four teams that are clearly better than everybody else. And I think that is true. I do believe Illinois, Michigan, Baylor, Gonzaga, Illinois, and Michigan are the four best teams in the country, but that doesn't play out in the tournament. The odds are just extremely against it. So I had to be different somehow, some way, and I usually will have a three or a four making the Final Four. And that usually blows up in my face anyway, but or at least a couple twos. This year I got three ones, and I could not put four ones in there. I'm going to go with the percentages and the odds of history, and I'm going to at least have one non-number one seed in the Final Four, and that's supposedly from the best conference in America, the Big Ten. And I've seen the Big Ten, and it is good. Ohio State beating Big 12 Baylor.
Oh, so you have
I got three Big
Ten
teams. I know, and I didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
I really did not.
I just processed it all as you were talking about it.
believe me, I processed it about day after I had filled it out. Like, oh, my, I have to. But I can't find anybody to beat Michigan. LSU's got firepower offensively, but I'm not sold on the SEC being that strong. The ACC was down. Florida State I saw the other day, and they're good defensively. They play like 10 players, 11 players, but I don't know about them offensively. Michigan, I'm not completely sold on them. I just can't find anybody in their bracket that's better than them.
Uh-huh.
And it's the same thing with Gonzaga. I can't find anybody that can really even challenge Gonzaga. And in the South, I think Wisconsin can push Baylor in the second round if Wisconsin gets by North Carolina. I think Purdue or Winthrop can give Baylor a game. I really do, because I have Winthrop beating Villanova. And then I got Tech against Ohio State, Texas Tech, Ohio State in the Sweet 16. And I was like, oh, it ain't going to be a Big 12 Elite Eight. So I went Ohio State there, and then I was like, well, I can't have four number one. So that's how I came down to Ohio State there. And Yeah, I don't really like my bracket. That's basically what I'm trying to tell you here.
No,
I don't like my bracket.
I never like mine. And I think this year, maybe because just the way the year's been weird, and like you said, I feel like the top tier is the top tier, right?
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was the year maybe that it could happen where all the one seeds get in, yeah, because of just everything that's gone on and
all in one place for the most part. You won't have fans.
So
I mean, it's more of a
level playing field, and, right, and when you have that, mm-hmm, the cream rises to the top type of deal. I don't know.
So you got Michigan winning it all.
Yeah,
I got Illinois winning
Michigan
it all.
Over Illinois.
So we both have Big Ten teams, yeah, winning it all. So
Illinois beating Baylor and Michigan over Illinois.
So you got two Big Ten teams in the Final Four. I got three. Your biggest upset in your bracket, the lowest seed, the biggest upset.
And I don't have, like, first-round upsets are basically non-existent on my bracket. So I'm going to say Clemson over Houston probably in the
second round.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't have anything
in the first round.
I really don't have any.
You didn't pick any 12s over 5s? It happens every year.
It does, but there was nothing that, like, I really, really liked, because I think too many people are on Winthrop because of what's going on with Villanova, and it just kind of made me pick Villanova, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so... But if I was going to pick one, it would probably be...
Everybody's jumping all over the Georgetown one.
If I would have picked one, it would have been Santa Barbara over Creighton.
I was going to say, Creighton's got blown out by Georgetown.
That's the one I would have picked had I picked a 5-12.
I'm going to tell you the one that's probably the one that's going to happen, Oregon State, Tennessee.
Yeah.
We talked about at the very beginning.
Yeah.
All the orange that we're wearing.
I hope.
Yeah. I don't. I have Tennessee in the Sweet 16, so no, I don't.
Well, yeah, and I think I have a Tennessee player on my draft,
so
I probably don't want that to happen either.
I told my son yesterday, I said, you know what, I really don't care about my bracket. There's a little bit of dough involved, but I'm more worried about
the draft
and how my players do. That's what I'm more worried about. So it should be a lot of fun. We'll see how it plays out. At least we have a tournament. It is a little bit different because the first-round games start here in about an hour and 15 minutes on a Friday instead of a Thursday. And then we have games on Saturday, and then the second round starts on Sunday and goes then to Monday. But that means that you can make a four-day weekend out of it. You can just cut out of work on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, watch games, cut out of work on a Monday, which you would have done anyway in a normal year because you had Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just that we move things back a day.
Yeah.
You have a horrible case of the Mondays, you're like, the heck with it. I'm going to watch basketball and call in sick or whatever it may be. Just don't say you have COVID. Number 9, Sterling. Well, by the way, before I get to that, all summer we've heard the challenges NBA players face living and playing in the Orlando bubble. If Michigan plays in the Final Four, which we both have them in the Final Four, they will live in an Indianapolis hotel for 26 days if you include the Big Ten tournament, because they had to stay there.
Mm-hmm.
No one understands the isolation sacrifice these athletes are making. I talked with Brian Haney about this yesterday. I truly believe this. I hope it doesn't happen, but... I don't think the big challenge for the NCAA tournament is this weekend. I don't think this is the big challenge. I think the big challenge is next week. Because these 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old kids are cooped up in hotel rooms, and they're not allowed, got to get permission to leave the room. They're by themselves in rooms. That's what Brian Haney said. They don't have a roommate. They're by themselves. Christian Brown, basketball practice, then video games the rest of the day, basically. Mm. Or FaceTime with family and friends. That's not normal, obviously. And you are going to, I think, you know, this, you might be able to get through it through Monday, okay? Through the first and second rounds. But for all the teams that make the Sweet 16 and then have to wait and play, what is it? It would be, what's next, the second round?
I think they get
Sweet
back
16,
on... A normal
Sweet 16 is on
week.
Saturday. It'd be on Saturday, the show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the Sweet 16. So, see, normally the Sweet 16 would be a Thursday, Friday.
Yeah.
Instead, it's Saturday, Sunday. So that's a longer break.
Okay, so it's a quicker turnaround then for the Final Four then, because they're back on Saturday and Monday for Final Four and Championship.
So think about this for a second. All these kids got to go in isolation there this week, which would have been, well, I don't know what day they got there for some of them, but it was earlier this week. It would have been right away Monday, I think, or even Sunday. So let's say Sunday. That would have been the 14th? So if your team goes all the way to the national championship, you're going to be in that bubble for about 22 days, something like that. That's a long time, not as long as the NBA bubble. But here's my point. You got 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old kids, and they have some activities for them. They're going to take them to different places, the zoo, and there's Top Golf and stuff. I mean, they're going to organize all that. But you're isolated in your room, and there's only that stuff will only fill up so much time. You got practice, that's almost only so much time. And yeah, you can do some studying, that's true, by yourself. But there's nobody to hold you accountable. You don't have a roommate in your room, as Brian Haney pointed out yesterday. And so, to me, the longer you're there, the more what? Antsy you get, the more likely you are to violate a protocol or to, you know, you might not have COVID or anything, but you violate a protocol and you don't get to play. And if you think that's not, if you think that's crazy to think, you're nuts, because here's the thing. We got Major League Baseball players, adults, that couldn't follow protocols last year. One got traded away from his team because everybody turned on him because he put the team at risk. And this was even earlier in this process when it wasn't as safe as it seems to be now. You've had NFL players violate protocols. You've had NBA players that violated a few protocols down at the bubble. Remember Lou Williams went to a strip club? Yeah, that was a violation of protocol, safe to say. So if adults do it, and they are still all fighting for championships in those respective sports, why wouldn't an 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old kid do it? And Brian Haney said yesterday, well, you know, you've put all this into it. You probably don't want to let the team down, and the goal is to win a championship. Not for every team. Do you think that the 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 seeds think they're going to win a championship? The goal is just to go as far as you can. But that's, I understand what Brian's trying to say is, well, they should be thinking that way. Well, I don't want to let my team down. But all it takes is one selfish individual or somebody just going nuts mentally and just got to get out of the hotel room and they can't wait for permission, so they just go and then they violate a protocol and it could be a key player. Doesn't mean other players are suspended. They just simply, that player can't play. And if you don't think that can happen, all you got to do is look. There's been a handful of circumstances where players on Super Bowl teams going to the Super Bowl. I remember one for the Bengals in Miami who ended up not playing because he went south of the border. So if these adults put all this work in and then decide to just blow it right before the Super Bowl, why wouldn't an 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old kid do that? And we're talking lots of different athletes and players involved. So I hope I'm wrong, but I think you're going to see a few of those that are going to happen next week, because it's not normal. It's not natural to be cooped up like that. And yes, people have a lot worse off in different places in the world. Not trying to make a whole bunch of excuses for athletes. But listen, this has been a tough year. These players and athletes have been in a bubble. They've been an extended bubble, really, since the season began. They can't go parties with their buddies and friends. If they did, they probably, you know, heard about it. Or, I mean, you just can't do what you normally used to do. And then you put your team at risk. And I think it's going to be the same thing that happened in the NBA. Are you upset? You know, Wichita State really upset they lost last night because they hadn't been in the bubble very long. It's no big deal. But I think when you get to next Saturday with the Sweet 16 and next Sunday, teams that lose, kids are going to be upset they lost. They would have wished they kept playing. But what's going to make them feel better is they know they don't have to be in the bubble anymore. Mm-hmm. They can go home and sleep in their own bed. They can, you know, because what you have in a normal tournament is you go back. Like if Kansas made it out of the first weekend, you go back to Lawrence. You'll sleep in your own bed. You'll be there for a few days. Then you'll head back out to the whatever the destination is for the Sweet 16, right? That's not going to happen this year. And I think that is going to come down to, I saw a great article by Kellis Robinette, who we've had on our show before, with talking K-State. And it was about the team that's most mentally tough getting through not the stuff on the court, but outside off the court and in the hotel rooms and in the bubble. That's those teams that are tough mentally, that can stay together and hold each other accountable, are the ones that are going to probably have more success in this tournament, because it's going to become a bigger issue come next week than it will be now.
Yeah.
And then even beyond that, Final Four, you go another, you're going to play Elite Eight on a Monday and a Tuesday, and then you got to wait around till Saturday to play the Final Four games. That's asking a lot.
Absolutely.
And the kids can also say, we don't get paid for this.
And it's something we can't factor in when we're filling out a bracket either, right? No, we don't know what the mindset of these kids are.
Well, you don't know if they get positive and the guy didn't play like Moses, right, for Georgia Tech.
Yeah, and so it's like, you just don't know what's going to happen in this thing. And you hope that they have everything set up the way that to have their student-athletes in the best positions possible, right?
Oh, I think
they
do.
And I feel like they do on the men's side. I feel like they do. And I think that they're getting them what they need. But then you can't account for human nature, right? You can't account for...
You can't hold every player's
different
hand.
Different mindsets right. on life.
Right.
We're not talking basketball. We're talking...
What if you're mentally going stir crazy and you need to get out and get fresh air? I mean, no, Antonio Gordon, we don't know exactly all the stuff, but Bruce Weber said total health problems. You don't hear a coach say about a player. I'm guessing here. Antonio Brown, I'm guessing this whole thing with being in that, in essence, extended bubble, not being able to live a normal college life because you're on a sport and you don't want to let your team down, and you're a young guy, you know, he's a young guy, he's not a senior. I mean, I could see where mentally you start to go a little stir crazy, absolutely.
Yeah.
And people I don't think understand, you know, Brian Haney talked about this yesterday too. He said Bill Self's been a little bit easier on his players when they make mistakes and do this and do that and hasn't ridden them as hard as past years because he knows what they're going through in regards to you got to stay in the dorm room, you can't go do this, do that, hang out with as many friends as you used to, you got to kind of stay within your own, you know, the team aspect. And people don't even understand. I don't even understand. I think I understand better than some, but I don't even fully understand what these kids are going through and coaches too. Of to try to keep this all clean so you can get through an NCAA tournament. That's why what the NBA did in their bubble was so astonishingly great. A lot of people said that wouldn't work. It did. Yeah. But it took a lot of sacrifice.
Definitely.
You know? Number 9, Sterling women had a great year. They went 30-1. They were 30-0. They went to the NAIA tournament yesterday. And in the round of 16, they lost to the 9-seed Dakota State University. Sterling was the 8th seed despite being 30-0. I don't know how they figure out how to seed all that.
Yeah.
But anyway, they lost. They were down like 28 at one point. They got rolled. They lost to Dakota State 91-77. But the Sterling Lady Warriors had an outstanding year. They won the KCAC championship for the first time in 10 years. Won the KCAC tournament championship. I already said that. Sterling also won the first ever NAIA Women's Basketball National Championship opening round championship and reached their first NAIA round of 16 since 2010-11. Brenna Eilert from St. John's Tipton, a senior on the team this year. She had 7 points in yesterday's game. As Sterling, who, of course, made the tournament last year but then couldn't play because of COVID, canceling it, they at least got to play this year, and they had a great year at 30-1. All right, the Chiefs continue the retool, and they have two new offensive linemen. If you didn't know, here's Joe Tooney. The Chiefs signed him, a free agent from the Patriots, 28 years old. He's going to play guard, or so we think, for the Chiefs, probably left guard. He got the big contract. Here's what he thinks about being a Kansas City Chief.
It's always been such a great organization, huge fan base, and, you know, just want to be part of this team that's had so much success recently. And I know there's a lot of special players here and a lot of special coaches, and, you know, just the whole community seems to rally around KC, and just want to, you know, do what I can to help the team.
5-year, $80 million contract. Of course, once again, the key number, $4.5 million against the cap for the upcoming season. Got guaranteed money as well up front. And he's only allowed 3 sacks since 2018, so he's a big upgrade for the Chiefs on the offensive line. Another guy that the Chiefs picked up is Kyle Long, who had retired, came back this year after sitting out a year. He's a Pro Bowler his first 3 years as a guard for the Chicago Bears. Had a lot of injury problems his last 3 seasons before he retired after the 19 season, but he's back. 1 year, a $5 million deal. He will provide, he may be a starting guard for the Chiefs. He may be more of insurance as a backup guard. Either way, pretty cheap deal. I know $5 million seems like a lot to you and me, ladies and gentlemen, but in the NFL, 1 year, $5 million deal is actually a pretty affordable deal for the Chiefs. And here's Kyle Long on how Kansas City is just different in a good way.
I will say that I wanted to experience free agency. I'd never done that before, obviously being in one city my entire career. You know, Vegas had me in. It was a good trip, and I went straight from there to here. And if it feels awkward landing in a city that you don't consider home, but when you walk into this building here in Kansas City, it becomes apparent that things are different here. And sitting in Coach Reed's office, I just knew this is where I wanted to be. And if they wanted to have me, I was going to do everything in my power to make this happen.
Chiefs also re-signed Blake Bell. Blake Bell went to the Cowboys last year, the former Bishop Carroll product. He is back tied in with the Chiefs. He's a good special teams player, a very good blocking tight end. So Blake Bell comes back, and honestly, I'm okay with Blake Bell, and I'm okay with walking away from Nick Kizer, although the Chiefs are bringing him back too, but maybe he won't make it through a training camp or get cut next preseason. I don't know. But the Chiefs are bringing Blake Bell back after 1 year with the Cowboys. He had 11 catches for 100 and some yards. Once again, he's more of a blocking tight end and a very good special teams player. So the Chiefs bring him back. The Chiefs have signed Mike Remmers, who was on the team last year, to a one-year deal worth up to $6.8 million with $3.3 million guaranteed, a source has confirmed. Remmers will be at right tackle, likely in a competition with rookie Lucas Niang, who the Chiefs drafted last season in the third round from TCU but then opted out due to COVID. And yes, the Chiefs are still pursuing a veteran left tackle, according to Nate Taylor of The Athletic, who covers the Chiefs on a daily basis. So let's update you on what the Chiefs have done. So they have Joe Tooney as their left guard, as so it appears. Paid a lot of money to bring him in, a Pro Bowl guard from the Patriots. He's 28. At center, we're still not sure what the Chiefs are going to do for sure there. They have extended an offer to Austin Ryder to bring him back at center. We don't know if Ryder's going to accept that or not. Right guard looks to be Tardif, who sat out, opted out last year. If, in fact, the Chiefs want us to hang on to him, which it appears that's the case, but they're maybe they'll walk from him and save some money there. Who knows? Kyle Long looks to me like a backup guard right now, who could easily slide into a starting guard if there's injuries. Your right tackle looks like it's going to be a competition between Mike Remmers and Lucas Niang. And before you go freaking out about Mike Remmers being re-signed, I know he looked horrible, as did the whole offensive line against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in Super Bowl 55. Keep this in mind. He's played more right tackle in his career and actually did an okay job filling in a right tackle at times this year for the Chiefs. But he had to go to left tackle because Wiley was only comfortable going to right tackle. And, of course, Wiley and Remmers were beat to a pulp off the edge. Remmers at left tackle wasn't even close to what he's used to playing. He's used to playing guard or right tackle. So he was playing basically his fourth position on the line. So there is something to be said for Remmers coming back. He's also a guy that's versatile. So you can move him around left guard, right guard, and then right tackle. You probably want to keep him away from playing left tackle after what we saw last year in the Super Bowl, although the Bucs do have a great pass rush. And then Lucas Niang looks like they want him at right tackle. It makes sense. You don't want a rookie protecting the franchise, and that's Patrick Mahomes. You don't want him protecting the blind side of Patrick Mahomes, a $500 million man. So I've seen some people talking, well, Kyle Long, they got him to play tackle. No, they didn't. It's amazing how many people say stuff and have no idea what they're talking about. Here's the thing. This is what the Chiefs have right now. You've got left guard is Joe Tooney. Your center is undetermined yet. Your right guard is Tardif as of now. Mm-hmm. Okay? I think that could be Kyle Long if they walk away from Tardif somehow, some way, or trade him or whatever. Right tackle is going to be Niang or Remmers. I think Niang will win the job eventually. I think that Remmers provides insurance so that if Niang doesn't catch on right away, Remmers can maybe hold down the fort at right tackle, and then Niang can, you know, they can groom him to be the starter maybe halfway through the season, maybe sooner. Maybe he'll win the job in camp and be your right tackle. That's fine, too. That would be great if he did, because then Remmers can be a backup. Allegretti right now, we don't know if they could move him to center. If they don't bring Austin Ryder, there's talk Allegretti could play center. Allegretti, you know, obviously would be a backup guard. They've tendered Wiley. I mean, Wiley going to be back for sure. I don't know if that's official yet on Wiley. Mm-hmm. So that would provide depth. So you got the big holes at left tackle. Now, there have been some talk about Tooney's willing, according to yesterday's report, that he's willing to play wherever, center, guard, tackle, whatever helps the team. I don't think you brought in a guy that's great at guard and pay him that much money to move him to left tackle. I just don't see it. Riley Reif, I believe, signed with the Bengals. Did I see that right? He's a free agent from Minnesota Vikings. Yeah. I believe he signed with the Bengals. Yes, he signed with the Bengals. So Riley Reif is off the market. He's 32 years of age, a free agent from the Vikings. That was one guy that we mentioned that could have been a possibility left tackle. Orlando Brown is a guy that the Ravens are looking to trade. Perhaps the Chiefs would trade with the Ravens to get Orlando Brown. That'd be interesting if they did. I don't know if the Ravens are going to want to trade with a team that they're trying to chase in the AFC, but who knows? Depends on what you can offer. So right now, and then I see people say, well, the Chiefs, there's lots of good tackles in the draft, and so the Chiefs can just get their left tackle in the draft. Do you really think Brett Veach and Andy Reid want to go with a rookie at left tackle to protect the blind side of Patrick Mahomes?
I don't think
so. I don't think so. And so I believe the Chiefs are going to sign another veteran to play left tackle. I think Tooney is your left guard. I think Tardif or Long is your right guard, depending on what they do with Tardif. Center, it sounds like they want, you know, it might be Ryder, which, you know, whatever. I'm okay with. I'm not thrilled by it, but okay. Right tackle, Niang, combination Niang, Rimmers, that's fine. You know, Wiley can play some guard too. You know, that might, you got Wiley and Long. Maybe this is, maybe it's setting up, because some guys you want to wait till June 1st to let go. It helps against the cap. And I don't know Tardif's situation, but I wonder.
Tardif's dead cap is $5 million more than his cap hit.
Right, but.
So you can't.
But in some situations, in some deals, it behooves you to wait till June 1. It saves you money by waiting till June 1 to cut a guy.
And it might be different after June 1st with Tardif. Right.
That's what I'm
sure.
saying.
It's probably because, it very well could be because his contract is a rollover.
Right, right. So I still think that we can't automatically put in pen Tardif's going to be back on the offensive line.
I don't think he
line.
Will be. Based on the moves they've made,
well, yeah, because
all these
because
guards, they've signed three guards.
You can't have too many. You can't have too many linemen. I mean, you've got right now. You got Allegretti, you've got Tooney, you've got Long, you've got Wiley. Which I still got to double check on Andrew Wiley, because there was that a tender or did he actually agree to a deal?
I thought he agreed to sign the tender as well.
Let me see here. The Chiefs tender him a day ago. He's tendered, but I don't see him actually accepting it yet. So that if Wiley comes back, you're right. Then you got a plethora of guards. You've got Wiley, you've got Long coming after a 1-year retirement. You have Tardif, you have Tooney, you have Allegretti, and you know, Assimile is trying to come back, which I don't think they're going to re-sign him.
No.
And Niang can play guard or tackle, by the way. And then you got that left tackle hole right now. So. Yeah, when you look at the numbers, you almost have to say, and I've said for 2 years, even I said this in Tardif's last year when he played, that his contract is kind of expensive for a guard. And now that you spend all the money with another guard, I would think Tardif is a possibility to be like Damian Williams, opt out and never play again for the Chiefs.
Yeah. I don't know where he fits in based on the moves they've made, and that's what's in my mind. So either if it's post June 1st, whatever, if they maybe they can find a trade partner for him, because they're not going to release him right now. That'll kill $5 million on their cap.
Right.
So maybe it is post June 1st will be a little bit different on the number there, and they can wait until then.
Right. And it's interesting because there is an article that came out a few weeks ago. Chiefs confirm 2021 returns of Tardif, Niang, and Damian Williams. Well, then they let go of Damian Williams. They could do the same thing with Tardif. I'm trying to pull up anything about his contract. Did they say anything about a June 1st thing? Because there are some situations like that. But I don't have it here. I can't find it. So I don't know what they're going to do there. It does seem like if you're going to have Tardif back, did you really need to tender Wiley? Or did you need to sign Kyle Long? Or is Kyle Long just insurance in case Tardif doesn't come back the player he once was, and Long is insurance if Wiley didn't sign a tender? Of course, Wiley can play some tackle too, but you don't want Wiley playing tackle. So to me, he's a guard. And you're not going to put Wiley at left tackle because they did not want to have that in the Super Bowl, so they put Rimmers there.
Yeah.
And you don't want Rimmers at left tackle. And you don't want a rookie at left tackle, Niang. So the Chiefs still have to figure out what they want to do at left tackle. And I think they will draft an offensive lineman somewhere, don't get me wrong. And maybe first round, maybe second, maybe fourth or fifth. But I just don't see them going with a rookie at left tackle, whether it's Niang or somebody they draft. I'll tell you another thing. The Chiefs could re-sign Austin Ryder and still draft a center in the draft.
Yeah.
Because I think that would be, I mean, there's the Humphrey kid from Oklahoma. I don't know how high he'll go in the draft. There's the center who blew out his knee from Alabama is really good. That might be there later rounds. There's some good centers. So perhaps the Chiefs will get a center and groom him in the draft and then plug that left tackle spot with a veteran. And the Chiefs really went hard after Trent Williams, and they got outbid.
Mm-hmm.
And then Rife is gone. Whether they were interested in him or not, I don't know. Maybe they're going to put together a trade here and go to Orlando Brown from the Ravens. But, you know, that's a scary spot to still have open.
Yeah. I said, according to Spot Track, Andrew Wiley is on the cap this year.
He is. So he did sign.
Yeah,
okay.
That's according to
the. That's what I thought I saw the other day.
Pretty accurate most of the time.
That's what I thought I saw the other day, but then the recent stories have been saying offered a tender. So
yeah.
Now Byron Pringle's offered a tender. Charvarius Ward, he's been offered a tender. Those guys have to decide what they're going to do. I think Pringle's a no-brainer. He's coming back. But yeah. Ward's got to figure out if he wants to do that, which I think he will too. And then you got to figure out with Sorensen. He's a free agent. You got money. And then extension for Matthew, you probably want to work out before the season starts. Chiefs got a lot of work to do still. But they've made quite a bit of progress. They have improved the offensive line. But they've got to figure out left tackle. And they're working on it.
Yeah, they're not just sitting on their hands and just be like, oh, we'll be all right.
I'm trying to see if I can.
There's that going on.
Oh, there we go. Come on. There we go. Offensive tackles, free agents. Top remaining at each spot. Villanueva from Pittsburgh. Russell Okung of the Carolina still out there. They're two free agents that are still there. But are they tackles? Villanueva, was he a tackle? I think I know what Okung is. I think Villanueva was a tackle. Mitch Trubisky went to the Bills yesterday, so he's going to be a backup to Josh Allen. Here we go. There's one for offensive lineman. Top one still available.
Villanueva is a left tackle.
Left tackle. Yeah. Russell Okung is still available. And Villanueva, I think, may still go back to Pittsburgh. So there's not a lot of names out there now for left
tackle. Jason Peters, 39 years old.
Yeah, you're probably not going that
I mean,
route.
I'm looking at the list here of
was
left tackles that are available.
Oh, I thought he played more guard.
Yeah, it's listed as left tackle on what I'm looking at here.
Well, then you start to go, well, would you possibly move? And then the question is, would you move Long or Tooney? Is Long going to be a left tackle? I don't know if you're going to go with a guy that's been out for a year moving from guard to a left tackle to protect the $500 million man.
No,
and I'd be more comfortable with Tooney going left tackle than Kyle Long.
Oh, absolutely.
And maybe that's the plan. Maybe he's going to go.
I'm still
maybe
not.
Tooney's going to go left tackle, and then you're going to have left guard's going to be Allegretti or Kyle Long, and your right guard is Tardif. And then right tackle's Niang, and Rimmers is a backup. Wiley's a backup, and then Austin Ryder's back at center. And then you've got it all solved, and then you find a young lineman in the draft you really like to play tackle. Maybe that's the plan.
Yeah, there's not. I'm not 100% like
convinced. Tooney's
Joe
playing
Tooney's
guard.
Not at all a possibility to play tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would not be 100% convinced he's not a possibility to play center if they don't get Ryder back.
Well, I think I've always thought that he could easily go to center, and then you got I thought that.
Yeah.
And you would have Allegretti at left guard, and you got Tardif and Long at right guard. Or if you're going to let go of Tardif, you've got Long and Wiley a combination at right guard. And Tooney at center. I could see that. I see Tooney going to center more than I see him at left tackle.
Yeah, I mean, that would make more sense, right, as far as what you would see from what he is. But, you know, I feel like they kind of got this guy as an insurance policy for a lot of different places if something doesn't pan out. Because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you're giving a guard that much money.
Yeah.
You got to feel pretty confident that he's going to do something big for you.
Right.
And whether that's playing at guard or whether that's moving him to left tackle because you don't have any other options.
And is that part of
the
thinking?
You're going to draft a young guy and maybe have him play tackle for a year and then move him back to guard when your young guy can maybe step in.
Is that part of the thinking of giving that much money is because they're going to pay him more of what a tackle might make?
Yeah.
If you want to read between the lines there a little bit?
So,
and maybe that's the thinking was Tooney's going to be our left guard. We're going to go get Trent Williams, and then it didn't work out. And then we're going to work out other plans at left tackle, but we know we got the backup plan, and that's Tooney playing left tackle.
Yeah,
I don't see Kyle Long being the guy at left tackle.
No.
At all.
No.
I don't even know how Long will be a starter, to be quite honest with you. But, boy, there are people out there yesterday, all over social media, talking about, okay, Long's going to play left tackle. I'm like, really?
What?
What? He doesn't play tackle. He plays guard, and he sat out a year. I just don't think you want to pull a guy off a retirement heap.
No.
And say, okay, you sat out a year, you play guard, we're going to move you left tackle, and you have to be responsible to protect Patrick Mahomes' blind side. Yeah, good luck with that. And I don't think there's going to be this bona fide, unbelievable left tackle available for the Chiefs at the bottom around number one either.
No.
So thus, I think Tooney's got to go to left tackle, but I think the more obvious one is to find a veteran or make a trade to bring a guy in to play left tackle. And we know Brett Veach is open to trades, and he's not afraid to get rid of some draft picks. If the Chiefs are up against it cap-wise, and if they can save a little bit of money by not having as many draft picks, that might be the route they go. They might make a trade and make a splash that we're not even seeing right now. And maybe it is Orlando Brown, who's only 25 years old from Baltimore. Or maybe it's some other guy that's available that's, you know, 29 or 31 that the Chiefs can trade a second-round pick this year and a third-round pick next year for a guy to play left tackle for a year or two and draft the replacement. I really wish I was inside Brett Veach's head. I really do. Then I would know those answers. But
yeah.
I trust in them to get it done. And so far, I like what they've done. So far. But there's a lot of work to go.
Yeah.
So book it. Four number one seeds in the final four, according to Dusty. Or book mine, three number ones in Ohio State. Or say, wow, that's good advice. I'm going to go opposite of what Wade and Dusty do. Fill out my bracket, send it in, and tell them that I know more than they do. And you know what? You probably do.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.